What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Imperfect. And guys, this is going to be a very different podcast. With quarantine happening, where we're staying at, where we're renting, has not allowed any more guests to come inside of where we're renting. So we are forced to do all of our podcasts online now, which is a good and bad thing. Bad because I know the quality may not be up to par, but we're going to work and try to see whatever we have to do to make it the best it can be. Aside from that, now we are able to interview a lot more people that don't live in the area, so I'm super excited for you guys to see this guest lineup that we have coming at you. Speaking of our very first guest doing this online quarantine coronavirus, oh man, it's getting crazy out here, but we got Jordan Westergaard. Did I say that right?
Yes, sir.
Awesome, man. Dude, it's so good to see you again. It's been a fat minute.
I know it has been, man. Years. It's crazy.
Years. It's been years, bro. It's so crazy. So, because you were going to college at Idaho State, you ended up transferring, right?
Yeah, I transferred back to Dallas. I grew up in Dallas, and they had a really good film program at the school that I wanted to go to. So I just finished my last 2 years there and got to experience some really good equipment and, you know.
Oh, dude, that's awesome. All
sorts of stuff.
That's one thing I wish ISU had better. We were running around with handy cans rather than, you know, cinematography. Yeah. Good old end cameras, you know.
But it was a good start. I'm not going to lie. Like, the experience that I got there went a long way. I still remember, like, the Photoshop classes that we took.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I learned a lot at ISU.
Yep, same. I do love it. I do love it, man. So what did you end up getting your degree in?
I got my degree in media arts and film. So I primarily did filming, documentary filmmaking, BuzzFeed style videos. Were a lot of my classes that I took. I took interviewing classes. I did radio, sports broadcasting, so a wide variety of stuff. But my main focus in my career is going to be film.
That's awesome. That's exciting, man. Because I know we were kind of talking about the kind of things you did. Did you do it here at O-State or where you are at? But we're talking about you did a little bit of radio, news, TV, filmmaking. Is a lot of that experience from here, or where'd you get all that from?
No, man, I really just got into it through growing up and in school. I always liked talking to people. I always liked talking about sports, and I always enjoyed movies, and I always wanted to make them. But as I was growing up, because I'm a little bit older than you, as I was growing up with film and different things like that, it was just a little bit different. Now there's so many wide ranges of ways that you can make film.
Yeah.
So it makes it a little bit more fun also, but I always wanted to be a filmmaker my whole life.
That's awesome, man. It's weird because you're right. It's like we live in this world now that you needed a team of 50 people to make a movie. And now we have YouTubers like Peter McKinnon, Casey Neistat making films or just YouTube videos or
Yeah. Have a film
style with one person.
And it's a lot more competitive too. I mean, you don't have to have a degree to be a filmmaker.
Yeah, very true.
There's kids that are 10, 11, 12 years old that are much better than I am.
You know?
And I've been doing it for 10 years and have a college degree. It's just the way that it is.
Yeah, dude, that conversation of even, I mean, is college worth it, you know, like, because it is. I mean, people can just, as long as you get a decent camera, you know how to decently write. I mean, there's so many things you can just learn on YouTube alone. You can go on there, learn script writing, learn filmmaking, learn how to use the latest high-tech cameras and all those kinds of things with the type of a search button rather than going and paying X amount of money for college and time and commitment, you know. Do you think college helped you kind of grow as a filmmaker?
I think college helped me because I met a teacher and her husband while I was in school, one of my professors and her husband I worked with for a significant amount of time. And they were master students from NYU and they had been in the business. They had written scripts for big time people. So I met people through them and I got to experience some things with them. But I will say this, I learned significantly more on my own outside of school, on YouTube, watching videos, studying, practicing on Premiere, just, you know, nonstop, than I did in class. Absolutely.
Dude, that's so weird. I feel the exact same way. It's like, I feel like I learned, 90-95%. It was just really, I think the nice part is about having professors is you learn so much. And when you have questions, there's just some questions that Google can't answer.
Yeah, of course.
You know, and it's so nice to go to a professor and be like, listen, this is what I'm trying to do, X. Do you think the branding is right with Y? And they're like, blah, you know, and you're just like, oh, this is awesome, you know?
Yeah, and when you're on a film set and you're working with the professor and you're like, okay, I'm at a stop point where I don't know exactly what I should do here. Should I face the camera this way? Is the sun going to get in the way? you know, the shadowing or the lighting or the audio or anything like that. And they can be like, look, in my experience, this is what I would do. You do what you think is best, but this is what I would do. And you can say, okay, well, I have two perspectives now, what I thought I would do and what somebody that's been there has done it. And that's something that you can't always find on YouTube by looking up a question. That's probably that 5 to 10% that you do learn, but it's invaluable at the same time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely learned more just doing it on your own. And I think it's that way with a lot of things. You know, like if you're going to be an engineer or a doctor, school is still very important. But yeah, for what we do, you're going to learn a lot more just going out and doing it on your own.
Yeah, because there's a very big difference of going to YouTube and trying to learn what does frame rate mean compared to how to have open heart surgery.
Yeah,
like, sure. It's not going to be a 15-20 minute video.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's so crazy. So aside from filmmaking though, what radio and news kind of background do you have as well?
So I ran, I actually did like DJing and sports at the radio station that I did for the college that I went to owned their own radio station. So wow. It broadcasted to that city. So I could run sports. So I did like the sports games where I could run the basketball games. I wrote sports scripts for them on top of the hour every hour. So I would go back and cover the last 24 hours of sports news. So basically I would write a script saying like this basketball team won so-and-so, what's his name, scored, you know, the highest amount of the season on that, you know, whatever. But the coolest thing that I got to do is I got to actually run the Dallas Mavericks, Texas Rangers, and Dallas Stars games. So I would go to the sporting events as a press member. I'd get a press badge. I'd sit in the press box. I'd write about the game during the game. I'd go interview players after the game in the locker room. And then I'd go do a full game recap afterwards that would go up on the website for the school. So wow. You know, I'm from Dallas. I'm a huge Dallas Mavs fan. So like Dirk Nowitzki, like I'm getting to meet Dirk Nowitzki, interview him, write about him, you know, like it's
dude.
Stuff like that. That changed it. So I'm a filmmaker by heart and I love movies, but that was also pretty cool. I'm not going to lie. Like getting to meet your sports heroes, talk to them one-on-one. So that's another invaluable thing that I got from school for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. That's super awesome, man. It's like, it's so interesting how you can have a heart for one specific thing in film or in media, but there is like so many other things you have to dip yourself in. Like I didn't know, you know, creating, you know, YouTube videos or podcasts or whatever, that I would absolutely love playing with the audio in post, or I would love making thumbnails in Photoshop, like all that stuff that you get to play with. And it's like, man, like people go to school for this, you know, to become a designer or, you know, a Photoshop designer or whatever it may be, but like you're actually getting to play with it. And it's kind of, it all relates, you know, it's interesting.
You were always good at Photoshop too, I remember.
Yeah.
So I used to pick your brain.
I took like 5 classes.
Yeah, I hated it. I loved it. I loved the final product, but like getting to that point was always so difficult for me. Getting a camera and filming and editing the premiere and doing that comes so much easier to me than Photoshop. Yeah. Anytime I have to do something in Photoshop, I'm like, ah,
I wish it's difficult.
I could just have them do it for me.
Dude, that's how I feel though, like with web design, because they make you take web design, and I'm like, a lot of these people are like, oh, I've designed websites from the core up, and I'm just like, I use Wix.com.
yeah.
But they're just in there typing things, and you're just like, what is happening?
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
Right, yeah. It's so interesting, though. So, a little bit interesting, though. You actually live in California, eh?
Just moved.
That is so exciting, man. How's life down there before all this, anyways?
So before this started and I was actually on film sets and doing things that I wanted to be doing, it was awesome. But I moved here like a month and a half ago. So I worked on some film sets doing freelance stuff and in a studio with my friend who's a producer at a studio in Hollywood. And everything was going great. I was meeting new people. And then all of a sudden, after about 3 weeks to a month, it just shut down.
Right.
So it's been very interesting. But we talked about earlier, people here are being really good about cleanliness and wearing masks and gloves and all that stuff when I've gone to the store when I have to. So hopefully things do get better quicker and productions can start. I don't know how long it's going to be.
Yeah, that's kind of the overall question, is when is this all going to end?
It's going to be a few months, I'm sure, at least.
Yeah, that's what it's looking like. It's going to be a fat minute. Yeah. But it sucks too that, you know, you and many others that I'm hearing, there's a lot of people out there like trying to start their careers, starting businesses, and this whole thing is just kind of like, got to put an end to it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm staying positive. I mean, there are things I can do. So I've always liked to write. And when I was in school taking 15 hours and doing the sporting events and all this stuff outside, I never really had time to. And then when I got out here, I was working 12-hour shifts on set. So when I get home, I'm dead and just have to go to sleep and get ready to get up the next day to be on set at 7 a.m. So I've had the time to start writing two scripts that I've had an idea on for a while. One of which I've really started like the outline and I'm getting into it and getting the dialogue in and everything. So that's good. You know, reading, watching some TV shows that I like catching up. I watched Narcos Mexico. I've wanted to watch for like
two. Oh yeah, that's good.
Yeah. So, you know, just random stuff like that. So I'm definitely staying busy. I'm not just sitting around, and there's stuff that I wanted to do. So.
Yeah. And that's so awesome about being a creative person is it's like one thing we never have is time. Now you have all the time in the world to edit, to post, to script, write, do whatever you want to do, you know?
Yeah, and I've been messing around on Premiere too when you say editing. Like you can just hop on YouTube and you can hop on Premiere and you can learn so many new techniques and things like that I'll be able to use when I go back to work. So it's like a time period for people like me and you that we can like use it to better ourselves and then take that and go back, you know, once we're going to get paid to do what we do, so.
Exactly. I do love that. I do love that a lot, man. So. That's crazy though. You're out in Hollywood and you're stuck home, man. Like, what are the odds?
I know, it's just crazy. It's crazy. But I do have some friends. So I lived in Long Beach for 5 years. And so I kind of, right before I moved to Idaho, actually, when I decided to go back to school, I lived out here. So I have some friends and stuff and I move out here. Now I can't, you know, like go do anything and hang out with anyone, but I am familiar with my surroundings at least. Which makes it a little bit better, you know, like I know the city that I'm living in, I know where to go. So, you know, you could still ride your bike, go take a walk. So I get out of the house, but for the most part, I'm just staying in and trying to get, you know, stay not sick for sure.
Not sick. I know, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the safest thing you can do right now. But I know, like, I feel like I have this extrovert. I don't know if I'm either extrovert, introvert, because I always try to analyze and it's like the extroverts, like the filmmaking, wanting to go do stuff. But introverts, like I love staying home and writing and editing and learning and playing some games and hanging out with the fiance. So it's like I feel like I'm in this weird dichotomy where I wake up and one day I'm like, I really want to go hang out with somebody. I want to go shoot something.
And I've kind of felt the same way too. Like I don't mind staying inside and doing these things because I do like watching TV and I do like editing and I do like doing all these things that you can do inside. But when someone tells you you can't go outside is what makes it worse.
Yeah, dude. This.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's just how I feel. But yeah, so at least we're both staying productive doing things that we
very true. So one thing you actually like doing is documentary filmmaking, which is one of your aspects that you want to like go in your life, right?
For sure. So with that, what I've found out in my short period of time being out here and speaking to people is that if you want to make your own films, whether it's, you know, any type of filmmaking, if you want to make an action film, if you want to make a horror film, if you want to be a documentary filmmaker, if you want to make films and direct films, you have to have money. Yeah. So basically where I'm at right now is I'm doing any work that I can, because the best thing that you can do in our industry is know how to do everything. So yeah. I'll take a job running camera. I'll take a job running lighting. I'll take a job running audio. I'll take a job getting coffee, you know, production assistants. Directing assistant, like I'll take any job I can so that I can learn all aspects of production. Because if you want to be a director, it's great to know how to do everything. And then I sit with people whenever they're in post and I try and learn new techniques, depending on whatever system they run. For the most part, I run Premiere, but you can learn DaVinci and you can learn all these different things and color effects and all this stuff. So I try and learn as much as I can. But I am going to get into documentary filmmaking whenever I get into a financial situation where it's possible.
Right. Yeah. But you got, like you said, the big money part is one of the biggest issues. That's why people are always trying to find sponsorships or whatever they can to back the movie.
Exactly. You know? Yeah.
Yeah, it's very difficult. But even like coffee running, I always like you grow up thinking like, oh, being a coffee runner, like that's stupid. Being an intern, that's stupid. But I went to visit some ad agencies and I was talking with this intern that pretty much just runs coffee for everybody. And I was like, yo, like, why do you do this? Like, don't you want to be like a filmmaker or make videos or commercials, branding videos type things? And he's just like, you know, I always thought the same thing, but listen, being around here and getting to sit in on some of these, you know, where the heads of Hershey's or heads of Allstate come in and they're talking about branding videos and their styles, and you get to hear, you know, the heads of your agency talk about all this stuff. He's like, that information is gold. So it's like, yeah, I'm the coffee runner, but I get to sit in on these meetings, which is
it's invaluable, man. I swear it is. Anytime you can sit next to somebody and you just hear something, you might use that technique that you hear running coffee and coming back. You hear something you'll use for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
There's no bad position. You know, it's not embarrassing to do anything. Everybody starts out somewhere.
Exactly. Very true.
Yeah.
That's very true. So, with this documentary filmmaking, like what do you like it? Like why does documentary filmmaking really stand out to you?
Well, I got to make a documentary when I was in school. So I went to New Mexico while I was in school my last semester with my film partner. So I had a buddy that I did pretty much everything with. And then the professor I told you about earlier, her husband went with us as well. And he's professor at a very prestigious school in Dallas. And he's a film professor also. And we went and we stayed a month with a Native American tribe. It's the oldest Native American tribe in the Southwest. They're called the Piquiris.
Wow.
And we stayed there with them and we filmed them, asked them questions, saw the way they lived. But primarily what I wanted to do was I always wanted to make, because Native Americans in general have always fascinated me, like their life, what they've thought about America because of obviously what happened hundreds of years ago and the way that they were treated, kicked off their lands. So how they felt about living here, what the government assistance was like, if they actually got it, how they made their life living off the land and doing all these things that they did then that they still do today. So I always wanted to make a video about a Native American tribe. So I found them and they were totally willing to do it. So I wanted to do a past, present, future type documentary. So we made a 12-minute, I believe, documentary with them. And it just covered where they came from, where they are today, and where they hope to be. And I got to learn so many awesome things about these people, and that's what made me fall in love with documentary filmmaking. I always enjoyed doing it because you're getting to tell someone's story.
Yeah. So
instead of, you know, like one of my favorite movies is The Dark Knight Rises. You know, it's Batman. It's totally fictional, but it's still awesome. You know, but this is just fact, and you're getting to bring someone's story to other people. And if you watch it and you go, man, I didn't have an appreciation for what Native Americans have been through, what they still go through today, how they handle their business, you know, then that's awesome. That's something that I enjoy. So, you know, I've always just liked being able to make someone's story come to life. I always kind of liked fact over fiction as far as my filmmaking is. But I still love fiction when it comes to watching it.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like, it's interesting because you leave different things. I hate when like someone goes and watches a Bohemian Rhapsody, which is, I don't know if you've seen it, right? Fantastic cinematography movie, right? But one thing I hate when, you know, you're reading the comments, you're reading like reviews or whatever, everyone's hating on it because it wasn't exact, right? There's a couple things in there that didn't exactly happen with, you know, with the real band. But people forget that it's a movie. It's there to set a scene. There's a narrative. There's a scripting process, as it would with, you know, with documentary. But it's meant to provoke feeling. It's meant to entertain you, rather than it's not a documentary. That's what documentaries are for. So you get to get in there and actually get factual, true information. Get to tell a really longer, in-depth story. Rather, there is still a story. There's still a scripting process of a sense, but it's a lot more facts. It's a lot more like you're viewing a real experience. So if you want to go there and you get it, because you can't obviously go around and shoot a documentary with amazing cinematography, lighting, a whole, you know what I'm saying, like going in there and like setting in a whole scene and standing everything up, like it's so different rather than going in there and showing real people in a real environment. You can't, like, you know, bring a whole tribe to LA to set up them all on a set, you know what I'm saying. So it's a different viewing experience.
And the thing about that, like you say you couldn't bring the tribe out to LA. The thing is that with documentary filmmaking, you would never want to do that because exactly. You want to get them in their environment, and that's what makes it so great. And with Bohemian mm-hmm. Rhapsody, I completely understand what you're saying. And I did see people commenting and saying that, but it is a movie, a documentary, you know, Freddie Mercury's dead. So you can't make a documentary with him. If you exactly. made that movie with Freddie Mercury and all the members of the band, and you were doing that and you used inaccurate information, then I could understand people being upset. But it's mm-hmm. a movie using actors. So there has to be the entertainment factor. It's not 100% factual. Mm-hmm. That's something that you and I and filmmakers and people that understand the industry, I think, mm-hmm. get when they watch a movie that some people that watch it for entertainment might not understand. Like, you know, sometimes we'll watch a movie and I'll be like, okay, that's just total acting. Like, and that's what makes a great movie to me. When I go through an entire movie and I think back and I go, I did not notice one time that someone was acting. That's a good movie.
Yeah, like, exactly.
I can tell, like, sometimes where I'm just like, man, that's bad acting. Like, the movie's still okay, but that scene was just not good or something like that. If I can mm-hmm. make sure the movie not thinking that, then it's good. And so people are, and in this industry, in any industry you're in, people are always going to complain. Like, you can never yeah. complain to everybody. That's a hard part too. But that I thought that movie was fantastic.
So, I did too. Yeah, and that's
a bunch.
Yeah, I just that's just one of the biggest things I think people don't differentiate is like when you go in and make a documentary, you want to be as true as you can. You want to shoot things like that. If you make a documentary about Freddie Mercury, you're going to use old pictures, old footage, old whatever you can use, but it's not going to be. In fact, if someone made a documentary, which they might be out there, about Queen, I guarantee it would not hit the numbers that Bohemian Rhapsody did.
No, of course.
That high budget of a set and that entertaining.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you're right. It wouldn't. And I'm sure that there are documentaries about Queen out there. I mean, just the AIDS aspect alone, I guarantee that there's documentaries about it because he was the first famous person documented with AIDS, and he was right before. I know Magic Johnson, the Lakers point guard that had AIDS. He was right before that point. Where Magic Johnson's lived a healthy life his whole life after that. Freddie Mercury died like right before that point happened where they figured out how to get someone medication and allow them to live. So there's definitely documentaries out there about him, but the movie was fantastic. The acting was great. A movie that I went through the whole time never thinking anything about the acting or anything. I was just stunned. And Queen's amazing too. So just listen to that music.
Yeah,
it's always great. Also, I watched the Beatles movie last night. Yesterday, I don't know if you've seen it.
What's it called?
It's called Yesterday, and it's about
the Beatles.
So I watched that last night too, and it's just like any movie I get to watch where it's Beatles or Queen music throughout the whole thing is just so awesome.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I love that. That whole plot to Yesterday about someone forgetting.
Yeah.
To see, like the world, they're like, yeah, you know, like the Beatles, they're like, who?
And it was so random too. It was like they forgot the Beatles, they forgot Coca-Cola, they forgot Harry Potter, but like the Rolling Stones were still a thing, and like Pepsi was a thing. So it was so random.
It's true, though. There's probably little things and little marketing campaigns that pretty much, I'm not saying Coke wouldn't be Coke, but there are probably little things like that, the little campaigns that if they didn't work with a certain person, like I think, I don't know, you watched Casey Neistat, right?
Yeah.
So like Boosted boards, like Boosted blew up those electronic longboards because of Casey Neistat. If there was no Casey Neistat, imagine the difference and who would be the top electronic longboarder or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
So it's like interesting to see that butterfly effect kind of like happen.
Very true. Very true. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so cool. It was so cool. But going back to this documentary filmmaking, you were talking about this tribe. Where did you post this video that we could watch?
So I posted it on YouTube, and it's called Peak Reese in America. It's a really cool story. Like I said, I think it's 11 and a half, 12 minutes long, but it just gives you a really in-depth look at the oldest Native American tribe in the Southwest. So, I mean, they've been around for over 1,000 years, significantly longer than that, actually. But the most relative part of the story that I could tell you without giving anything away is, and what we were really trying to show, is that they were also the largest. They had 7,000 members or over 7,000 members when they started, and now they have barely over 300. What? So that was the story that we were trying to show, is what they've been through, how they've gotten to this point, and how they can continue down the line. And the main problem is the education factor. The right. kids don't want to hear about the history of their parents. Yeah. So, you know, technology and different things like that make them want to go out into the world, go to college and not come back. So we were just really trying to show the kids there as well. You can go out and learn, you can go to school, you can do all these things, but you need to remember who you are and where you came from. You need to come give back to your community, bring that education back so that they can continue on. Because without the kids, you know, they're going to die out.
Right, exactly.
It was very, it was very interesting.
So you said 12 minutes?
12 minutes. So it was probably over like 80 hours of shooting.
That's what I'm saying. 3 months, or for a month of shooting and going out there and setting a try for a 12-minute doc.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That is so insane.
Yeah. I mean, and when you think about it, some movies are 3-4 months, and they put it down to 2.5 hours. So it was a lot of setting a camera up, shooting, asking questions, doing things that we didn't use. A lot of B-roll, which for like the audience is where you're basically just getting extra shots outside of things that you can use. So, I mean, we probably had 30, 40 hours of B-roll shots doing mountains, going up the mountains, horses running by, buffalo, the lake, drone shots, all these things that we did that we didn't use. So, yeah.
So what did you guys film on when you were out there?
We used cameras from school. So I think we used a Panasonic like PS200 or something like that. It's a 4K, oh, cool. 4K camera. And then we used drones. And we did handheld, we did tripod setups, but we did all sorts of stuff. And then I also used my 4K camera for some other stuff that we mixed in with it. So as long as everything was shot in 4K, you were okay.
Yeah, of course. That's insane though, man. A whole month, like you just don't even realize the amount of work that goes out there.
It was the most work I've ever done in my life, for sure. For sure. So- And all for free too. That's the hard part.
Yeah,
you know? Mm-hmm. And then we didn't get voiceover whenever we left. So we were at school putting the documentary together. And then after you go out there and you shoot the 70, 80 hours of shooting, you're going to go back and do another 50, 60 hours of editing. Because you're taking all of that shooting and you have to watch all 80 hours and you have to break it down. Keep seeing what you can live without. Because you have to get it under like 15 minutes. Otherwise, it's not going to be interesting.
Exactly.
Quick and to the point. So you go back and you watch it over and over and over and over again. And then all of a sudden we realized we weren't going to be able to get through the story without voiceover. So we had to drive another 10 hours back out there through the mountains in the winter when it was like icy in the mountains. So we had to drive back out there just to get a Native American voice to do voiceover because I didn't want to do it. I felt like it would take away from the authenticity of the video if it was me doing it. So I wanted to get one of the tribe members to do it. So we had to go out there and drive 10 hours back just to go get the voiceover so we could have someone run through the story to make it all flow, I guess, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Gosh, man. It just blows my mind because, like, you think of YouTube as a platform and you have someone uploading a 12-minute video of them eating mukbang or something like that or doing mukbang eating, and you're like, oh, this got, like, 20 million views. And then there's this project that took a month to shoot, months to edit and put together, and how many color corrections and re-edits and re-scripting and re-audio fix and whatever it may be, and you finally put it out, and you're like, it's got X amount of views.
Yeah.
You know, it's stressful, because I did that so many times when I was doing, like, the dancing thing and work on a dancing film, script it, write it, rent an area, rent a videographer, do all those kinds of things, shoot the whole entire thing, post, like, a 3-minute video, and it was, like, 50 views, and it cost $1,000+. Yeah. It's crazy.
But it's the experience. It's the experience. Because once people learn your name, those views will go up so much. It's just all about recognition and people knowing who you are. But what you learn when you spend that $1,000, that's what it's all about. Like I learned more in that month than I learned in my entire life.
Yeah, and that's the most important thing, because now the next project, you know so much more.
Yeah.
And the next, you carry so much knowledge throughout it, and you're finally hitting better audiences, you're hitting better numbers, you're hitting better just overall art, you know?
Yeah, and once I get my name on a credits of a movie as a production assistant, and scrolling through and people see it, then they start searching your name on Google and then they start seeing these old videos that you made. And then it just, so the recognition, basically what I'm saying is you might not get it right now and the satisfaction might not be there right now, but at some point, once your name gets out there and people go back and look at it and the views go up, they'll be like, man, this guy made this, you know, 10 years ago and this video is still so cool. Or so.
Right. Yeah. I'm hoping I can do that vice versa. I tell all my guests, including yourself, that I hope one day that one of these many guests that I interview is going to blow up and be like, yo, I interviewed that guy.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm sure it will happen, man. I'm sure it will happen.
Yeah. It's going to be exciting. But before I let you go, you mentioned something that I kind of want to jump on too, is you were talking about The Dark Knight as one of your favorite movies. And I know we were talking about directors, but starting first with the movie, The Dark Knight, like what to you makes that one of your like top three favorite movies?
Heath Ledger. Best villain of all time, in my opinion, but not just that, one of the best acting jobs I've ever seen. It's a movie that I can watch once every 6 months for the rest of my life and never get sick of it.
Yeah.
Just the most incredibly bone chilling, like freaky, amazing acting jobs I've ever seen. And I think he was one of my favorite actors by far, and his trajectory was going so quickly and he was going to be one of the best actors ever. And then he passed away, but you know, that role was just unbelievable. And I love Batman, but that is absolutely my favorite one. Like, it's not even close. I don't know. I just think that role is the best role I've ever seen.
I know. I agree. You know, it's just like when he passed away, I was like, oh, people are like hyping this up, right? Like, because I never saw it like in theaters, which I wish I did. But when it did come out on disc, I was like, it was after he passed away when I finally went and saw it. And I was just like, wow. I mean, regardless of him passing away, like, this movie is phenomenal. It's amazing. Like, his acting was tremendous. And that's when I absolutely fell in love. I was like, what even is this? Like, it is so fantastically well shot, well lit, well scripted. The characters, the amount of interactions of, like, how the characters are engaging with each other at the certain points throughout the movie. You're just like, this movie is phenomenal.
And you have to give credit to Christopher Nolan too, because in the Batman movies that he made, like the Tim Burton Batman movies in the 90s were awesome. And like Jack Nicholson's Joker was still really good and so different. But Nolan's Batman's, Christian Bale, you know, like people make fun of his voice or whatever, but those three Batman movies that he made were so good. And he's an awesome director too. So I think he had a huge part in why Heath Ledger took it to another level on his own, but I think Christopher Nolan was a huge influence on why the Joker was that way. He wanted it to be like that. Like, I know he took stuff from like Clockwork Orange and some of these really creepy, creepy movies. And he didn't want it to be anything like Jack Nicholson's Joker. He wanted it to be completely different. And out of respect, Jack Nicholson, because he's great. But I think that Christopher Nolan was a big part on why Heath Ledger's Joker was like that. And I think Heath Ledger just went with it. So yeah. I've watched a lot of things about that. I actually watched one the other day that was like an hour and a half long. And Heath Ledger said that he wouldn't have done the movie if it wasn't for Christopher Nolan's view on what he thought the Joker was supposed to be. Because he said that his view was the exact same thing. Like, they sat down and they just figured out, like, they both wanted the character to be exactly what they thought. Mm-hmm. So they just ran with it. And it ended up being a masterpiece, man.
It really is. It came out so phenomenal. Just watching back, there's something about that movie you just still don't see in a movie today. You know, it's just so different and so psychotic. Like, I absolutely loved the new Joker. I thought it was really, really, really well done. But still, there's, like you said, there's this creepiness that Heath Ledger had that you just, I haven't seen. You know, like, the new Joker, it was creepy, it was good. Just makes you cringe, you know, like, in a good way. You know, it's just like, ugh, you know. But that movie still has such a good element to it that you still feel like you're living inside of his head. Like, you're seeing the world through his view.
Absolutely, And in Heath Ledger's portrayal, it was more of just, he was a psycho just to be a psycho. Like, his joy, his joy was just to terrorize. And he never wanted to kill Batman. He would never kill Batman. His whole thing was them going back and forth. But his whole life was literally just to terrorize. Where in the new Joker, it gives you an awesome spin on, like, something that people deal with today, like the mental health issues and stuff like that. That movie focused on someone that had a real problem.
Right.
And it went in depth into that too. So, you know, like, the new Joker was awesome as well. And individual acting, it was fantastic.
Right.
But it really gave you, like, the mental health aspect and, like, what people go through today. So, you know, they're very different, but both very good at the same time.
Yeah. Do you like, have an opinion, especially as a filmmaker, do you have an opinion, like, when this movie was coming out and when it came out, and still to this day, you can still see a lot of hit back because we're kind of, quote unquote, glorifying a killer. You know what I'm saying? So do you think when we make these films and we, you know, glorify killers or saying, like, wow, we should feel bad for this guy that's killing people, do you think that just makes an overall good movie, or do you think that is hurtful to the audience that's watching it?
I don't think that it should be hurtful, personally. But like we talked about, you know, everyone's going to have a different opinion no matter what you do. I think that when I looked at it, I said, I mean, it brought to light to me things that I didn't know. You know, I don't deal with mental health issues, and I can't see what somebody goes through in a day-to-day life, because a lot of people that have those issues don't talk to you about it. Mm-hmm. So when I watched the film, I was like, man, you know, this guy was hurting, and it literally brought to my eyes how painful something can be when someone's treated so badly, and when someone's treated so badly for so long, at some point they snap. You know, so I mean, to me, I felt, I left the movie and I thought, what a great acting performance, and I felt educated on the subject.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can understand why people get upset with it, but I didn't take it like that at all. I literally looked at it and go, man, you know, you need to treat people better, because that one person at that one point in your life that you say something to or you do something to might have been pushed so far to the edge that that's just like their tipping point. So right. I didn't feel it as a glorified thing. You know, like, it was the Joker, so it had to have that aspect to it. But it just showed that you can only push people so far, and people deal with a lot of stuff. And, you know, so I felt more educated, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'm definitely in that realm. I feel like people should be a little bit, you know, educate themselves or their kids, you know, of what they're watching, what they're seeing. Of course, there's going to be any and all types of things out there that you have to kind of educate yourselves on before you go witness. If you have mental health problems, probably. Depending on what they are, you know, whatever it may be, especially talk to a counselor about it before you go see a movie like that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And to see that kind of pain, you know, I don't want it to cause anything, but I know there was a lot of that going on, and, you know, same, I think there's a little bit of that kind of even with The Dark Knight and just kind of any movie in general with the kind of giving that background of any kind of villain, you know, no, we shouldn't feel bad, like, the killing's wrong, you know, but it's like, I think giving people that perspective of which why Joker is so phenomenal is it wasn't, you know, like, you know, The Dark Knight, when it's just like him being psycho because he's so freaking psycho.
Yeah.
We get to see why he is psycho, the things he went through, the pain he went through. And I felt a very similar way when I left the theater. I felt good. I felt like I was informed. I felt like, you know, I should be a better human being. Like, the next time anybody reaches out or wants to talk or anything like that, especially when you walk in the street or you work a new job, like, any possible way you can, you don't know what they're going through, so if you can just try to be a positive, like, how you doing, man, how's it going today, like, that would have helped him in that movie. Like, it was just like the whole time the movie was just trying to beg, like, just one person, give me one person to just acknowledge me and say, like, I'm doing good things, blah blah blah, blah. And like, it could have changed the outcome.
Yep. Yeah, 100%. And besides the Joker, like, by itself, like, we're isolating the Joker, every villain, or most of the time, 90-95% of the time, when you see a villain, you're going to end up cheering for him. It's the way that it's the way things are made. I just watched, like, a year ago, I watched Vikings. These people were terrible humans. Like, they went and they wiped out villages. They raped women, slaughtered children, took all their things just for gold and silver and all this stuff. But when they go and they do it, or when they're fighting each other and you have a main character you like, you still as an audience will always find yourself cheering for that guy not to die. And, you know, it's just the way filmmaking is. It's the way storytelling is. It's always been like that.
Yeah, I agree.
It's going to happen with everything.
When you back, like, just if you can back somebody, their whole goal is, like, if the Joker died at the end of the movie, like you said, you would feel sorrow. You would feel the pain because it's a whole perspective, you know, and it changes the perspective on me. When I left that movie, it changed so much. It's, you know, there's a lot of bad people in this world. But the thing is people, yes, there's mental issues and there's probably a lot of things that just happen naturally within your body, within your own mind. But the things that you experience, see, feel, think, growing up about yourself or about others, the pain that you feel, like it's a lot of what humans inflict on other people. You know what I'm saying? When you're growing up and I hate, you know, like there are, like I said, again, very bad people, but these people do have backgrounds. You don't realize that, like, you know, bad people come from bad people. You know, the amount of people that I grew up personally that, especially like, I can't even tell you, there's this one bully in school that always bullied me. Crazy dude, right? But come to find out, we went to this like workout place one time and I met his dad. Like, and he was there with like, it's a kind of was like a hot spot, you know, it's high school. We would always go there. It's like this little fitness center, but they had swimming and all that stuff. But his dad dropped him off and I got to see his dad be a complete douchebag to him, and it was just like, wow, this guy is a douche to me because in turn his dad is a douche in general. Like, you pick up that thing and you give it off, like you just are what you experience.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, it just makes you give a different perspective. Like, now it's weird because now I feel like I see people being an asshole and it's not like, man, you're an asshole. It's more like, who hurt you? You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's just all because of like one film can just change the perspective. So again, I think it just gives a different view that you just wouldn't have seen before.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And you never know what people go through. That's the hard part. Yeah. Now it doesn't make it right that because you're treated badly that you go treat other people badly, but that's just human nature. Like, when you're a child and you're treated that way, maybe you think that that's the way that things are done. You don't know any better. So as you grow up, or especially when you're younger, like in high school, I mean, you're 14, 15, 16, 17, like, you don't know.
Yeah, you don't know anything.
You look back now and you're like, man, if I knew what I know now, like everyone always says that. So you have no idea what life really is when you're 16. Yep. I don't care what you think at that time. So I mean, I can understand, and that's nice to have that perspective because now you see that it wasn't you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree, man. 1,000%, 1,000%. Jordan, I hit everything we had. Do you have anything else you would like to add?
No, man, I appreciate the time, dude, and I'm down to do this. I'm down to do this whenever. I might be coming to Idaho actually to spend some time with family for a few weeks or a month or so. If this carries on, because there's no work to do out here and I'm doing some stuff with my mom currently. Right. So if we do that, and we could do it in person, great, but I'm definitely down to do another video session of this whenever you want. This was awesome.
Absolutely. Love to have you on, man. It's so exciting to hear people that you sat next to going out doing great things. I'm so excited to see what you come up with, man.
Cool. Yeah. Next time let's do one where we do, just like talking about movies only specifically. Like, we can pick different movies and we kind of dissect them. That'd be
fun. Oh, I love it. I love dissecting movies. We got to do it, man.
Thanks, Gage.
Well, thank you so much, man. I'll talk to you later, brother.
All right, sounds good. Bye.
See you.